Good morning, and welcome to Family Life. Your hosts, Salima Muhammad and Dr. Nadia Muhammad. Dr. Muhammad, we're so glad to have you with us today. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. It's a pleasure to be on the call today.
This program is sponsored by New Africa Excellent, Mirad Speaks. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most gracious, the most merciful. I greet the listening audience in the peace of Assalamu alaikum. This week's discussion begins a series, Keeping Up with Your Mental Health. Special guest is Samaya Muhammad. She is the daughter of the host, Salima Muhammad. Samaya's philosophy is sharing light with the world and finding comfort with oneself. She has a kinetic relationship with animals and loves working with companion and large animals. Welcome, Samaya.
Welcome, Samaya. Great to have you. I'm effective on the show today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Samaya just said thank you in Japanese, and I will reply with Buishitashimashite, which is you're welcome. She's forcing me to learn, listening audience, which is a beautiful thing. Keeping up with your mental health. Today we would like to discuss specifically mental health and how it affects our youth. We are speaking of depression and anxiety, disorders that may affect daily life. There's an old adage that dates back centuries. The expression is children should be seen and not heard. Actually, it's an old English proverb dating back to the 15th century. The original format of this comment was really designed for women who were expected to keep quiet. This is actually recorded in a 15th century collection of writings by an Augustinian clergyman called John Merck. It's interesting, as many have attributed this type of idiom to scriptures. And it is not. It is man-made. It was culturally created to keep women silent or young girls silent, and then it became a comment used for children in general. So with this type of statement and culture, what does it present? It presents a psychosis. If I keep things inside, if I'm not able to express, then I cannot process my thoughts in a creative and productive manner as God created. So we start developing disorders, issues, the lack of clarity. Samaya, if you would continue the idioms expressed in this culture, starting off with how men should be, if you would, please.
The quote says, men should be strong, aggressive, and fearless. It is a gender stereotype that is thousands of years old. And I have a problem with this quote, well, this belief, rather. It's very detrimental to a man's mental health. And it is thought that men should not express their emotions because they are seen as weak. in fear of being seen as weak, as these men tend to suppress their feelings, which in turn causes suicide rates to go higher than men. Statistically, over 30% of men will experience a period of depression, but only 9% of men report having feelings of depression and anxiety every day. And this really angers me so much, because we're teaching men, younger generations of men, to be silent and suffer in silence. And I don't think that is right.
Dr. Muhammad, if you would chime in on that.
That's a very profound statement that you just made, Samaya. You know, from a spiritual perspective, when you think about Allah and how He created male and female, Allah says in both in the Bible and the Quran, male, female, created them both. And when you think about Allah, He created, He's beneficent and He's merciful. But Allah is not one-sided. You know, and when you think about the male and the female, you have both hormones. You have the male hormones in man, and you have female hormones in man, and vice versa for females. So Allah created us equal. He's compassionate. He's merciful. And all of the characteristics that you see in females is expressed in males as well, because Allah created us equally. And Allah has the characteristics of both. We're just a physical manifestation of the characteristics that Allah has in Him. So when you're teaching a man to be strong and, you know, to hold back with your emotions, that's not teaching Allah. That's not representing who Allah is. That's not representing Allah's creation. So from a perspective of spirituality, the male and the female have both characteristics, and we need to honor that and support that in both male as well as female, and not, stereotype a male to be strong, stereotype a woman to be weak. And, we just have to come together as a family, as a community, to understand our roles holistically and the synergy that we both have to offer as male and female, to come together as a family and to express ourselves in the manner in which Allah created us. And that's both male and female. So thank you for that. You're welcome.
But what I'm going to do here now is, you know, speak about the social systems, specifically social work addresses the social systems and their cultures. And we just addressed some of the cultures of our very own society. So when we start speaking of depression and or anxiety, which I'm going to give a clinical definition of both, but first I want to talk about how this ties in. Dr. Muhammad's background is in public health, as is my background in public health. So I'd like to address this from a social work perspective, in that when the breakdown of social systems occur, that we develop a dysfunction that becomes major. And when it's major, there's an imbalance. Then when we speak about an imbalance in life, then we don't have a focus that's going to be reasonable. So when we speak of social systems, we're speaking of family, religious groups, work relationships, and how these entities interrelate, essentially how they coexist and affect strengths and weaknesses. So some of those core areas are human behavior, certainly social environment. We want to talk about, with regard to social environment, what are some of the services offered. That would be psychotherapy with individuals, families, just essentially addressing problem solving before it gets out of balance. Improving social and health environment as early childhood. Before 5, we mold that child to become who that child is going to become at 5. Being clear about specific resources and services in the community, and of course, social policy, which is representative of the legislation or legislative process. Healthcare, access to healthcare. Imperative and other public health initiatives, how we eat, how we feed the mind. When I started my PhD program, there was one major factor constantly exercising the view, and that was you are what you think. Samaya, if you would give us the ethnic breakdown of some of the social behavior factors, specifically among the African American community.
Yes. The ethnic breakdown is in the African American community, the food side rate is 70% lower than non-Hispanic white population. However, the suicide death rate is higher among African American men than women.
Dr. Muhammad, if you could comment.
There were some things that you had mentioned today during your dialogue, which is a lot of information. And that information can be sort of sorted out on many different levels regarding public health. But if we're talking about issues in the Black community and particularly among young people, I think before we start to answer the suicide rate and talking about suicide, because it is a very serious problem, particularly public health problem in our communities. But before we even get to that, there are a couple of things that I wanted to mention, especially, speaking to your age group, Samaya. We live in a society where our young people, not just our young people, but young people in our community, with that regard within the Black community. We're constantly interfacing with social media and images, and we're being told 24 hours who we have to be, what we have to look like, who we have to act like. We have these images in front of us, and if we don't meet the standards of how we're supposed to be, how we're supposed to look, how we're supposed to present ourselves, how we're supposed to, what are our self-images, and we're constantly being bombarded with what we're supposed to look like. We are not enough for some reason. And so we're in these types of settings where we're in the institutions where we have to pretend to be someone that we're not. And, it's very pervasive in our community. Again, we have to dress like certain individuals. We have to talk like certain individuals. We have to look like certain individuals. And we are just not enough. And so what does that cause? That causes disruption. That causes anxiety. That causes depression. And then, we put ourselves in a position. And it's not like, our young people are doing this on purpose. So I kind of like want to speak to you, Samaya, about that. Do you agree with that, where you're constantly being pressured to be something that you're not?
Yes. I definitely agree with what you said. It's so much pressure, especially on the younger generation, to act a certain way, and it never seems like we're never enough for people. We always have to fit into a certain mold, and we always have to constantly try to prove ourselves because we are not the majority, we're the minority. So we're always constantly comparing ourselves to the social beauty standards. Even for men and women, some African American men do not feel like they fit the mold for the beauty standard for men. And that brings their lower self-esteem, that brings their self-esteem down. And then I would like to talk about the parents involved in the, you know, community.
Right.
Parents often push, you know, their kids speak up. They often push their, how do I say, their feelings away and be like, oh, it's nothing. Don't worry about it. Just keep pushing. Or completely just ignore it and don't address their child's problems. And that's what I have an issue with. And people, it just piles up on, I mean, it adds to the depression and anxiety because they feel like they can't turn to someone.
Wow.
And, you know, and then having a lot of, like, social pressures, like within friend groups, it's hard because you feel like you can't fit in anywhere. Like, oh, you're too white for black people. Oh, you're too white, and you can never fit in.
And that causes stress and duress and anxiety and depression. And that's why, thank you, Tamara, for sharing that, because that's what I was trying to draw out of this whole beauty standard business. Really happy. Certainly. And I think what's important is to counteract that. And before I even say that, but you said something that was very poignant. You had mentioned that when children or teenagers go to their parents, they sort of deflect such subjects. Don't listen to their children. And then, you know, things begin, you know, begin to become even more, you know, problematic because they're burying, you know, the child's not able to express itself in a way in which they can, you know, get their needs, whether it's having dialogue or therapy. Or even having dialogue with a psychologist or a psychiatrist, or just being able to create positive images and create environments where you create a positive image for your child, for your, you know, your teenage daughter or son to be who they are. That's why it's very important for us to make sure that our children, even in the educational system, if the child's going to a public school system, I do think there's some responsibility on part of the parents to educate their child outside of the public education system. You know, teach your children about their heritage. Teach your children about their history. I'm talking about beyond slavery. I'm not talking about who you were as slaves. I'm talking about you're the kings and queens from Africa and poor Africa. You know, they're ages. You know, you teach your children about who they are. And when they know who they are, it builds their self-confidence. And so I do think there's a responsibility on the parents' part, you know, to create an environment where children can see positive images in front of them. You know, it's okay to, you know, they need to be able to be exposed program. I have some experience with that where, you know, we would have children from the ages of, we started off it from 15, actually 13 to 17 high school students where, we, you know, we took in as at-risk youth. We taught them about who they were, what their history was. We taught them about how to act at home and abroad. We taught them about how to conduct themselves, you know, at a dinner table, how to set a table. You know, we had public speakers come in to teach our children to how to, you know, give a presentation in front of an audience, teaching our children modesty, decorum, elegance, and civilization. And I think that's important. You have to be able to give your children something to live for. And it can't just be Facebook, Instagram, social media platforms, or whatever other media platforms that people are on, which is TikTok, because I'm a little bit older, so you have to excuse me. But you have to give your children other things to strive for, to cultivate them. And so if your child has an interest, let's say, in piano, and sometimes you don't have the resources to give your child piano lessons, I get it. But if your child wants to be a painter or an artist, you know, you want to cultivate that. You want to be there for them to make sure they can rise there to their God-given talent. And so I think it's important for us to part of the responsibility of the parents. And we put a lot of responsibility on the education system, but really it's your responsibility even to educate your child outside the education system. But Tamara, what you're saying is very, very poignant. It's very timely. And thank you for this one. Your head as a young person, because
You know, we're not out in those trenches. You know, we don't know what goes on in those settings. And so we need to continue to communicate among our young people and have dialogue so that we can kind of close that generational gap where, you know, you have young people who say, hey, you older people don't understand us. And the older people are saying, you younger people just don't have any civilization. You know, you need to be taught by us. No, we need to listen to each other. You know, we need to talk to one another and not at each other. So this platform and this session is really beautiful. It's good to have a young perspective bringing us information and helping us understand your pain, your anguish, and what you're going through. So we're here for you. And I'm hoping that we can continue to have this dialogue, maybe even in the future and even on a different platform where we can, you know, talk about the ills that affect our young people. So nothing new. Sorry, I'm just going on and on and on about it.
I want to apologize. I actually wanted to bring up a point that you made, like young people and, like, you know, especially, you know, parents. And I feel like one important point is that a lot of children and teenagers don't feel safe or don't feel comfortable talking to their parents about their mental health because they know how their parents would react or how they would just brush it aside. So that also contributes to their depression. So growing and, you know, when your mental health issues aren't addressed, they get bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's why, you know, it's a problem.
Right. No, you're right. And I think to your point, you know, children, teenagers, they need an impartial witness to intervene in some cases. You know, I mean, I was an oncologist at one that I sort of called through. I know it's really hard for me to believe somebody, but I was in it. And, you know, I was lucky because people were older who were impartial that I could go to and speak to and dialogue with. And I'm telling you, it made a real, real difference. You know, it's okay. You're not going to share everything with one parent. Sometimes you have one parent in the household. Sometimes you have two. And some things you can share with one parent over the other. But it's okay if you can go to somebody that's externally, that's looking out for your best interest, that's impartial, whether it's an aunt, whether it's a cousin, someone you confide in, if it's a confidant, that's fine. But just reach out to someone. Even if it's a suicide hotline, you need to speak to somebody. You know, I implore you to do that. You know, reach out to a hotline. Reach out to an impartial party, a cousin, a friend, a friend's mother, a friend's father. You know, whoever it is that you can connect with and you can share your thoughts and your feelings with. But one thing I will tell you, do not withhold them. Don't withhold what you're feeling. Go to somebody that you can trust as well because you just don't want to go talk to anybody that's going to tell all the business either. You want to be able to speak to folks you can trust and to share information, and I think that's important. You know, mental health in general, there's a stigmatization, you know, it's a stigmatized,
yes,
by it because you feel that I should be okay. It's not okay for me to feel depressed and experience anxiety, but it is okay because this is normal, especially when you're going through your teenage years and you're different hormones, you know, that, you know, in general, your hormones are changing at every stage of development, especially when you're at 12 or 13 years old. And so, you know, you're still developing as a human being. You have different hormones that are still developing. Sometimes they're balanced. Sometimes they could be out of balance. And these, all these things contribute to your overall health, your mental health. And so these things have to be evaluated as well. So you're going to be going through changes. But the key takeaway is to find someone that you can rely on, somebody you can depend on and trust, and keep them in touch with the top line, where you can just speak to someone that you don't even know. I say get help. Don't hold it all in, because it's not going to produce any good results.
I would like to share, thank you, Dr. Muhammad, so much. I would like to share, you, Dr. Nadia, you have been such a resource, even in Samaya and I, personal family, and you know, there's a conundrum of experience and feelings and, oh, my gosh, in the teen years. You spoke specifically of, and I'm going to be very transparent here, and Samaya, you chime in once I'm done. You spoke specifically about the Rite of Passage program, and Samaya, once I'm done, I want you to comment on this. And we provided a Sweet 16 Rite of Passage for Samaya. And, oh, my gosh, for her father and I, it was such a profound experience. And it actually was recommended by you, Dr. Nadia, that we do this for her. And, Samaya, if you would let us know in a few seconds here, I'm going to say something else. How that affected you as a teen and how it impressed your adulthood. Now, before you do that, I want to speak of a very specific experience, and I called Dr. Muhammad. And I remember, Samaya, when you were coming up, you really, really liked the golf, and I was like, oh, my God. What is happening to my child? And I remember going to the school system, you know, and teaching. And it was these golf kids, and I was like, oh, my dear God, in heaven, help me. And then I talked to this English class, and I remember this young man specifically. And we were going over Shakespeare, and I called on him. It was actually a substitute role for a professor, and the class was crazy. They were all over the place. And I asked this young man to start reading Shakespeare, and he was so eloquent that he would bring tears to the eyes. And I said, young man, you have a future. And his face just lit up. So I myself, in being transparent, experienced implicit bias. And I called Dr. Nadine. I said, oh, my gosh, what's happening to my child? And you said, Nadine, I remember specifically you said, calm down. They're very intelligent people. She's going through a process of expressing, and you're happy that she's expressing as opposed to not expressing. And then I sort of got this student, and I was okay. So, Samaya, if you could talk about those two experiences and some of your own mother's implicit bias and share with the audience so we can show that, you know, we've gone through these very processes that we're speaking of ourselves.
Okay, so you're talking about, like, goth and being alternative?
Yes.
Okay.
And how your father and I responded to that.
Cool. You guys did not respond that well at first. You're like, no, no black nail polish, no dye in your hair, no wearing black. And as a young person at the time, I felt very unheard and unseen, because at the time I was like, this is what I'm interested in. I'm not harming anyone. I'm not harming myself. So I was like really confused, and, you know, I felt unheard. Because I felt like this was an expression of who I was at the time. And you guys eventually caught on. But it was very interesting, because I felt, you know, because I'm lying, and like, oh, I want to look like that, or I want to look like this. And, you know, having parents saying no to, you know, expression was very, you know, challenging on my mind, because I felt like I was just trying to express myself and find somewhere I could fit in and see who I was at the time. And having someone say, no, you can't express yourself, or no, you can't be who you want to be right then and there. It was very, you know, troubling at the time.
And Dr. Muhammad saved the day.
Yes.
I really did try to be an advocate for Maya. You know, listen, generally speaking, from a biological perspective, you know, the brain is a very complex organism. And the oriented is situated in such a way that a lot created in a way that we are constantly making comparisons, right? That's what the brain does. And you're constantly growing, you're constantly evolving, and your thoughts and your processes are constantly shifting. So when children and teenagers go through these stages, let me just be clear, these are stages.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't last forever because you're continuing to evolve as a person. And so, you know, Tim called me to then you call me, and I do get other parents sometimes that call me, you know, they're upset and they're worked up and they're uptight. But no, that's what the brain is supposed to do. That's one of the functions. And so as long as the child is not harming themselves or physically harming or even emotionally harming themselves or other people, calm down. Because it's actually going to be okay, you know, and as long as it does not conflict with your religion or your belief system or your moral compass, it's okay. Believe me, they change and they evolve. One thing I want to say, you know, before I close my comments and remarks out, allow children to be who they are. Let them to explore. Allow them to explore. Allow them to express. Allow them to reveal themselves as they're growing. Don't wait until they get 16 or 17 or 18 and say, now you can express yourself and now you can grow. Because
yes,
at this point, this is your child. They don't know where to go. They don't know where to start. So you have to give them some leeway and be alive enough, how much leeway you can actually give them as you're grooming them, because Allah entrusted them into our care. So it is our job, it is our responsibility to groom them in a way that Allah asks us to groom them from the perspective of the Quran, from how we've been trained, how we've been taught as Muslims, even if you're not a Muslim, just having morals. We all know right from wrong because we're all from God, whether you call yourself a Muslim, whether you call yourself a Christian, whatever you call yourself, you know right from wrong. You have God in you. And so you know that there are tenets that you have in you. But what I'm saying is the takeaway is here. Don't wait until the child is grown to show them something, because that is not the time. And so I just wanted to add that. And if you're a new mom and a new dad, take up a child development book. It'll help you it'll help you understand what to expect through the different stages of life, whether it's, you know, puberty, past puberty, teenage years. They'll give you a snapshot of what's to come, and then you'll understand that you have a better understanding of some of the behaviors. And it may be odd to you, but nonetheless, these are things that, you know, the children are going to take you through. It's all normal. Don't get worked up. Just, you know, let them live out their process. So I just wanted to say that.
Thank you so much. So, Tamaya, if you would now speak about, because this is a very important process, you know, the 316, a rite of passage. How does that make you feel at the time, and how does that encourage your future?
Can you be a little bit more specific?
Yes. You know, having your entire family there, Aunt Gee speaking, your cousin Jalo speaking, and then having our community present. And, you know, because it was a choice between the Sweet 16 or the trip abroad, and I remember your father saying specifically to me, the trip abroad can happen at any given time, but she'll never be 16 again. And you chose the Sweet 16, the rite of passage, and there were some formalities. We gave the meaning of your name. We gave You had your favorite math tutor there who took pictures. It was really your sweet 16 introduction into the world, but your world was there, your community was there. How did that affect you, and how does that encourage your adulthood?
It encouraged my adulthood, because at the time I felt really supported by the people that really mattered to me, and having everyone that mattered to me in one room was very heartwarming, and I cherish that a lot. In terms of with me now, honestly, I feel kind of going back to the time. Because I think I'll just do that, but yeah, I felt really supported at the time. And yeah.
Amar, that was a very high moment for you, right?
Yeah, it was.
And so, and that's what we have to continue to do, you know, as parents and just, you know, even as individuals. You know, let's try to continue to create high moments for ourselves, like what you're doing now, Samaya. You're learning Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd expect that. It's just amazing to me that you even want to learn Japanese, and that's one of the most difficult languages that a person can learn. So I commend you even for those efforts. So continue to work on your craft, continue to do things that give you pleasure and make you happy, and continue to take the responsibility to create high moments for you, because that will push you along the way, you know, the path to live a full and productive life, doing things that bring you joy, doing things that bring you happiness, and you know, on your timeline, not no one else's, your timeline, and continue to do things that's going to make you happy. And I think you can recreate that every day in your life. You don't have to wait for the next life as well. Any type of event to make you can recreate that on a daily basis. You're not going out smelling a beautiful flower or walking near a pond or just drinking a cup of coffee, which I love to do. Because you want to recreate. So those are my final words. Yeah, that was very heartfelt and touching. I remember that particular event. I was there, and it was really beautiful to see you coming into your own. Very confident, beautiful black woman, very articulate, and it was just good to see you in that space, truly to create those beautiful moments for yourself. It didn't end on that day.
Yeah.
Oh, beautifully said. Listening audience, this show is brought to you by New Africa Excellence, Marat Speaks. Let us talk a little bit about clinical depression. The National Institute of Mental Health states that mental health is a disorder characterized by a persistently depressed mood, loss of interest in activities, causing impairment in daily life. Some cases include biological, psychological, and social sources of distress. And Dr. Nadia, you made specific mention of the brain function.
Right.
So depression may cause changes in brain function, including altered activity of certain neural circuits in the brain. So this is a very real problem. And sometimes I feel that we're dismissive of depression in general. What are your thoughts, Samaya, first, and then Dr. Nadia, your thoughts of that dismissiveness of depression? And Samaya, if you can come from other young people, you speak to a lot of young people, you engage in a great deal of debates, you know, on the subject. Tell us what young people are going through today, you know, your college-age students, the pressures of, you mentioned earlier some specifics, and then you know, they decide to self-medicate or, you know, go into addictive behaviors. If you can comment on that for a few minutes.
Of course. And there's like a lot of implicit bias, which implicit bias is an unconscious association, belief, or attitude towards any social group. Implicit bias, people may attribute to certain qualities or characteristics, and it's basically stereotyping. And a lot, depression has a kind of a negative connotation attached to it. A lot of people assume that people with depression are lazy because they, from the outside perspective, they're seen as not working or not being able to than they have, or from the outside perspective, they're seen unmotivated and lazy. And this is contributes as, you know, a young person to a lot of pressure and anger and frustration towards someone who is depressed. And a lot of young people today feel unseen and unheard because of this implicit bias of depression being lazy and, you know, not working hard enough. And depression in itself, and loss of interest in it. And I just want to speak that if you have depression or self-assessed depression, it is not, I repeat, it is not your fault. There's nothing wrong with you. Okay, to have depression or have loss of interest. And, you know, the pressure, the social pressure in society is that you have to work hard and, you know, just push past it and not address it. That, from a young perspective, is put so much pressure on us, and that causes us not heard. And I feel like from, you know, the younger perspective, depression is not taken as seriously because of this implicit bias. And a lot of people don't feel comfortable talking about it, even with their friends. They don't want to be a burden, or they don't want to be a bother. And so they don't have anyone to turn to because everyone's thinking, oh, you're just lazy and you don't work hard enough. And, you know, that's really a problem.
Yes, Samaria, that is a real problem. You so beautifully stated what depression actually is. And what you mentioned, I think, is very important, and I'm going to hone in on this. You have mentioned the implicit bias that's associated with people who suffer from depression. Sometimes they'll have parents or even friends or relatives that will say, you're lazy, you don't want to do anything, how come you're a slow starter, and, you know, you're all this kind of nonsense. So when you think about it from a biological perspective, and I'm coming from a biological perspective as well, there's something that's happening in your brain. You know, there are hormones, like for instance, there are neurotransmitters that are responsible for elevation of mood, and that controls mood. And when you think about it, you think about the hormones that, for instance, that regulate mood in the brain. One of the neurotransmitters, we also call it endorphins, is serotonin. You know, so serotonin is a key hormone that stabilizes a person's mood, feelings of well-being, as well as happiness. So the hormone impacts your entire body, specifically your mood. Serotonin also helps with regulating sleep and eating, as well as digestion. So you'll hear many people who suffer from depression and anxiety. They don't sometimes overeat or they undereat. It really depends on what it is. It's because there's a serotonin deficiency. And so my recommendation is to reach out to a primary care physician or a psychiatrist and get a referral and, you know, go to a lab and have it requested to check your serotonin levels. Because that could be a major contribution to why you're experiencing depression. You know, depression and psychiatric disorders should be treated the same as any type of other physical condition. And so it is an illness. It is real. Depression and anxiety is regulated by imbalances in the brain, specifically serotonin. And you have the right, because the doctor works for you. Let me just say this again. Your physician works for you. You have the right to ask questions about different labs that you want to see, that you know, what type of labs that you want to order. And I know sometimes people say, well, I'm not a doctor. How am I supposed to know? I get it. But if you're on this call and you suffer from depression, I'm requesting that you request your doctor to order some labs to check the serotonin levels. That could be playing a major role in your depression, and we want to get that balance. And sometimes that could be balanced with medication. Sometimes it could be balanced with homeopathy and acupuncture and things like that. So, yeah, don't give up.
Samaya, there's a new form of isolation as a result of the pandemic. If you can speak briefly about how young people are getting through this, how they're feeling through this, as a young person, how you're coming through this, how you're feeling through this, just briefly, if you would express, you know, the isolation that's resulting as a result of the pandemic.
So, isolation is like a huge deal for me personally, and I suffer from like isolation a lot. I can't handle isolation for long periods of time. So as I talk to my friends and younger people, social media, a lot of people are struggling being alone with their thoughts. A lot of people don't like to be alone with their thoughts, and so as a result of the pandemic, a lot of things, a lot of places, rather, are closed down or have shorter hours. And for the people who like to go because they don't like being alone with their thoughts, they're being put in, you know, isolation. And it's making them go crazy or making them feel unsettled. And a lot of people are struggling to find motivation going and to keep continuing on what they were doing before the whole pandemic started. So as far as what to do, I have no idea. But I do know, from observing, a lot of people are struggling to stay motivated and.
I think that's beautifully put, and it is real, and I say, you know, because of the things being closed down and because of things, families have to become more and more in tune to one another, and you and I, we're so blessed because we're able to walk in the fresh air, and I remember, and in Arizona, we really, really value that because when it's 120 degrees, it's an oven air. So it's like it's really hot. So we've been having these warm breezes, cool breezes actually, a little warmer weather in the 70s. But we've been walking, and I think that's so important, just to be able to get out in that fresh air without wearing a mask and having those specific restrictions. And we have a miniature poodle, and let's talk about the animals and how they can, you know, companion animals, animals can relieve some of that stress and that, how that works for you. Because you kill over our little dog. He's a little miniature black poodle. Explain, you know, how the animals and then you're going to start riding horses again. So these are some of the things that we're doing, you know, because you have to, you must continue living. If you can experience that, and that's going to become your specialty, and if you can speak on how to, you know, support animals are helpful during this time, and then again, you know, what different people need to do, get out in that fresh air. They need to have some form of, you know, outdoor activity. If you would, please. Thank you.
Okay.
Having an animal of any kind helps a lot. It can take your mind off a lot of things. And, you know, animals do funny things, you know. If you have a cat, you know, your cat may go over or, you know, annoy you. It's like having that distraction is super important. And animals are very close to your soul. And I think it's very important to have, you know, at least one animal with you. And, you know, they're just very comforting. And even if you have, like, one of the talking to your animal, the pet really, really helps. Because they can't talk back to you, so you don't have to worry about judgment. So it's very important. As far as, you know, getting time, you know, activities, you know, find a hobby. I picked up longboarding. Skateboarding helps too. Taking walks, going on a picnic, just do something. Pick up a new hobby or interest.
Excellent. Thank you, Dr. Nadir. If you can speak on that for a few moments.
Yeah, that's wonderful, Samaya, that you love animals. Yeah, isolation is real. Isolation is a symptom of depression, where you can't get out and you can't get a fresh air. And sometimes you live in multi-dwelling homes, which is multi-generational. Sometimes you have a grandmother that lives there and other relatives. And, you know, multi-generational families living in one unit. I mean, everybody's situation and circumstance is different. You have some people who live in apartment complexes. They can't get out to walk freely. And so that complicates the situation a little bit more. My advice to people is, though, to find something that you love and just do it. If you like writing poetry, if you're a rap artist, and if you like to write rap, or you like to read, or if you have an instrument, you know, pick it up, or explore different hobbies while you have this time and while you're cleaning and you're sheltering in place and you're in your chambers. Even if it's too delve into the spirituality more, you take this opportunity to meditate, to pray, to read more, to explore new opportunities. Even if you do a little bit of light exercising and yoga in the bedroom, if you could do that, if you could find a quiet spot, whatever it is that you could kind of get out of that isolation, try something new. Try something that you've never tried before. Or try something that you've always wanted to try. This is where the social media does come into play, where you can interface and, you know, you can go on to different, different platforms and different podcasts to learn new things. So there's this opportunity to grow as an individual or any way that you can do it and could be creative in doing that. Because isolation is, you know, I'm going to be honest with you, I learned how to sew in quarantine. Who knew?
Yeah, that's really cool.
So challenge yourself to be a better version of yourself during this isolation period. That would be my advice. A little bit of advice.
That is excellent advice. And I'm an artist, and I drew mountains for years, and I've been looking at my pencils, and I'm trying to feel which one I'm going to use, you know, to start, because there's such beautiful mountains here. Oh my gosh. Just being able to see the Creator's creation. Remember, Samaya and I, we went out in the backyard. It was about a week or so ago, and the constellations were so beautiful. And when we lived in Georgia, you couldn't see the constellations because of the trees. You just could not see them. And here, you can almost reach out and touch them. And the nights are so beautiful. So just enjoying that nature, you know, becomes imperative. And Samaya, you made a good point, just to kind of step outside of yourself for a minute, not to have to concentrate and self-analyze and be on at all times and various points. Before we close, Samaya, if you would share some closing words. We're going to continue this series, listening audience. But But if you have some closing remarks today, Samaya, and then Dr. Nadia, if you have some closing remarks, and then I will close. I thank both of you for being here. It's been such an honor to have my daughter here and share and share with the listening audience in the world that we must do things differently in a way that's going to be a positive, promoting a positive outcome, even under these circumstances. Samaya, you first, and Dr. Muhammad, again, your closing remarks.
Okay. So I just want to say, you know, if you're ever suffering from any mental illness or disorder, you are not alone. And please, 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 please do not feel like you're less than because you suffer from mental illness or a disorder or anxiety or whatever it is. Don't beat yourself up for it. Like, it's okay not to be okay. Allow yourself to feel your emotions. Allow yourself to express your anger, the frustration, the sadness. Allow yourself to just be and exist. And it's okay if you feel like you're struggling right now. Just never give up and keep moving, even if it's just drinking water or eating. Okay, that's an accomplishment. You're alive.
That's beautifully stated, Samaya. I don't have any much more to add because you pretty much summed it up. What I will say, my final words would be, you're worth fighting for. Fight for yourself because you're enough. You know, and at times a friend will call or you'll jump and they'll say, hey, whatever you need to do, I'm here for you. Take that same energy and that same love and that same persistence and perseverance and apply it to yourself because you are worth fighting for.
Sounds so beautifully put. Oh, I thank both of you. I thank you, Samaya. I thank you, Dr. Muhammad, for being here and taking time out of your busy day to share this. Next week we'll talk about anxiety more and some suggestions around that. Let me end with this, some resources. And I love this one book, and it is a conceptual thinking read, abstract concepts, and compiling insight. And this one book for doing this well is called Centering. And I love old women authors. And this particular woman, M.C. Richards, taught out of Columbia University many, many, many years ago. And she authored a book called Centering. And she used the abstract concept of the clay wheel. And so, you know, when you're molding clay and that clay starts to become too big on one side or lopsided on the other side, you have to pick it up and center it. You have to move the mold of the clay so that it becomes balanced. There's not much to see when it's being molded. But when the clay is formed, it's put into the kiln for burning, and then you paint it, and it's beautiful. But it's this process. And it's a phenomenal read. That book is called Centering. It's by M.C. Richards. And very important. The National Substance Abuse and Mental Health Administration hotline. And this is a national hotline that can redirect you to local resources. That number is 1-800-662-6222. 1-800-663-4357. That number again, 1-800-662-4357. Integrative Psychotherapy Mental Health Services. That title again, Integrative Psychotherapy Mental Health Services. And these are various approaches with cognitive behavior, other psychotherapy approaches, alternative approaches. You may contact your local services in your particular state and county. Again, I thank my guests and the listening audience. This conversation will continue next week. I can be reached at Salima, S-A-L-I-M-A-H-M-O-H, 77, at gmail.com. And Dr. Muhammad, where may individuals reach you if they would like to contact you?
Oh, yes, they can reach me at Dr. D.R. Nadia, N-A-D-I-A, Muhammad, N-U-H-A-N-M-A-D, 1, that's the number 1, at gmail.com.
And Samaya, if you would like to share a contact for yourself, if that's feasible for you. If not, that's okay too.
Contact me at HippieChick, HippieChick, 15 at acp.net.
Thank you very much. And to the listening audience, this program is sponsored by New Africa Excellent, Murad Speaks. Thank you for joining us today, and we look forward to our conversation next week. Peace and blessings to all. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum as-salamu alaykum.